Hello, everyone. Last time we talked about techniques of motivation and applying our concepts we learned before. The next chapter is Chapter 9, Foundations of Group Behavior, and then we're going to talk about team building after this one. There are several types of groups out there. Basically, we have two categories. One is formal, and the other is informal groups. Under the formal group, you have a command group, and you have a task group. There's not too much difference there. Really, these are the people who are out there working. The command group could be your leadership team, your production, your marketing, your research and development people. Under the task group, it might be the people who do the production. In your informal group, you have two categories. One is your interest group, and the other is a friendship group. An example of an interest group might be people who decide we want a child care center and let's go out and do some research. Or maybe the interest group, the bowling team, let's get our bowling team organized. And there are other interest groups just to make things more efficient. But these people just get together. They're not on the organization chart. The friendship group might be people who go out for lunch, go out after work, take a coffee break together. Maybe they go to a movie together. They're just friends. They talk about different things. And you will always have an informal group in an organization. Groups, the definition, two or more people working together, coming together to achieve objective. The formal is by the organization structure, where the informal is a group that is not formally structured. A command group composed of individuals who report directly to a given manager. And the interest group that I mentioned earlier, those working together to attain a particular objective with which each is concerned. A task group working together to complete the job. Maybe it may be a quality circle. We need to repair something on the product. And the friendship group, as I mentioned earlier, you just share a common characteristic, something you like to do, baseball, football, go to a football game together. Why do people join groups? This is a very interesting concept. One reason is security. There's power in security in numbers. Many times you're afraid to say something alone, but you join a group, you go in, talk to your boss as a team. Status, you feel important. This is very similar to the self-esteem. You feel important being a member of a group. We have Beta Gamma Sigma here at UT Tyler based on grade points and Honor Society. I hope many of you are selected. But there's some importance there. I'm a member of the East Texas Symphony Orchestra Board of Directors, and I feel important doing that. The affiliation need, the belongingness, social need certainly is satisfied when you go to work with people and you join a friendship group. And there's power in numbers. You go into your boss alone. You may not always get what you want, but you go in with four or five people and asking for something, which goes along with goal achievement. Goals are achieved many times with a group. You cannot do it by yourself. I have found that out to be very, very true. Here is a very important model. It's a five-stage model of group development, and we go through these stages. The first stage is forming, and if you've been on a committee, I'm sure you can identify with this. You go into the organization and the meeting, and you have no idea what's going on. Maybe you have agenda, but you don't know what your objectives are. The next stage is storming, and that's where you have a lot of conflicts going on. Well, you're supposed to do this. You're supposed to do that. Nobody wants to take responsibility sometimes. By the way, on the forming stage, it's very natural for a lot of ambiguity to be there. The storming, the same thing. People wanting to do certain things, arguing, and that's good. The next stage is called norming, and that's where the group gets together and decides this is what we want to do. There is bonding here. Norming also, you may have better cohesiveness, where it's important for you to be part of that group. Forming, storming, norming, and finally performing. This is where you're actually doing the work. And if it's an ad hoc committee, you will then adjourn. Here's another example of some definitions. The first stage, much uncertainty in the forming stage. The storming stage, as I said, a lot of intergroup conflict. The norming stage, where you do develop cohesiveness, which is a close relationship of people within the group. Stages of group development. Here you see stage one, forming, storming, norming, and finally the performing. They're talking, they're getting their work done. That last slide, those were communication networks. Group structure, the roles. Let's look at the roles in the events. A set of expected behaviors. In other words, how are you supposed to perform? It's easy if you're a football team. You know what a quarterback does. You know what the kicker's role is. In organizations, it's not quite as clear. Role perception, and that is how I feel I'm supposed to act. An individual's view of how he or she is supposed to act in a situation. And then role identity, certain attitudes and behaviors consisted with a role. You're a customer service representative and you have certain attitudes. I want to make sure that customer is happy. You also have role expectations, how others believe that you should act. And sometimes it's not always the same. I had my car inspected yesterday, and I expected a nice, happy person to help me. I had to wait. He was rude, and certainly his expectations and mine were different. I won't be going back. I'm sure you've had that same situation. Psychological contract, an unwritten agreement that sets out what management expects from the employees and vice versa. This can be in your handbook, this can be in your job description, and it could even be the dress code, how you're supposed to dress, how you're supposed to greet customers. Role conflict, a situation in which an individual is confronted by divergent role expectations. And I alluded to this. I said many times we think we're doing something right and the boss thinks something else. So that should be clear. And there should be feedback. How am I doing? And changes could come about. Group norms, as I said earlier, this is a stage in the group process where people come together. It's important to be a member of the group, and the group develops rules and standards. They're not on the organization chart, but they're just known, things that you do. Your performance, and one of the norms here I hope that companies have are high-performance norms, and that is we can achieve something. We can get 20% of productivity. Your athletic teams have high performance norms. We want to win. What would happen if you had low performance norms? Well, we don't know what we're doing, and we don't think we'll do that much. And what may happen, you may not do that much. So norms are important. We're going to be number one in the industry. Appearance norms, how you dress, and certainly I would recommend dressing conservatively, but there are companies that are very informal, your Google, your Apple, but then you have those companies, your especially your financial companies, everybody there wears a suit, for instance. But the norm sets standards, and you go along with the standards of the group on the appearance. Resources, group norms on resources, and even the way your offices are arranged and the way you get your work done. An example of group norms, let's go back to the Hawthorne studies. And this is a series of studies undertaken by Elton Mayo back in the 1924 to 1932 at Western Electric, Hawthorne Works. And they concluded that work behavior and sentiments were closely related. But what I want to mention here, that norms were very significant here. Group standards were highly effective in establishing individual worker output. One of the things they did find that some people did more work than expected, and they call them rate busters. And they were also ousted or ostracized by the group because they were rate busters. And I think that happens today. And what happens later, if you don't want to be ostracized, you go along with the lower standards of the group. So norms have a lot to do with work and productivity. group structure and norms, sometimes you can have deviant workplace behavior. I have seen this in organizations where people sit around and complain all the time and nothing gets done, trying to oust other people, backstab, antisocial actions by organizational members that intentionally violate established norms. And it is very bad for the organization when this happens. Formal group leadership, I'm sure many of you have been a formal leader. I know I have in several capacities. I've been a committee chairman. In fact, in today's world, in the academe at least, we call ourselves a chair. We don't say chairman anymore because of the sexist in the language. But you may be a supervisor. You may be a foreman. You may be a department manager. A committee chair, a task force head, a project leader. So there are several titles in the organization for a leader. Here's a very interesting study, and it has to do with group norms again. And this is by Solomon Ash, the Ash Study. And his basic idea was, what effect does the group have on the individual? And he asked a group of people, which line, A, B, or C, matches X? And what is it? Well, obviously it's B. They're the same length, right? But beforehand, he told six people what to say. He told them to say A. And then he asked the seventh how long the line was or which line met. So he set this up, and every person said A, 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 all of those people. Then the other one, the stooge, who didn't know that they had been told beforehand how long is the line or which line matches, and they went along with the group in a lot of the time. They put A also, even though it was an incorrect answer, not the majority of the time, but most of the time. So this study shows that we are affected by group pressure. I repeated this study once upon a time with women and asked them what magazines that they read or what was their favorite magazine. And every time, 100% of the time, they went along with the group. And I tell them later, they were students in my class, I tell them later, and they were mad at me. Why did you do that? Well, I wanted to find out what effect the group has. I mean, we are affected by group. We buy things because of everybody buys one. What effect does the size of the group have on the performance? Is it 2, 3, 4, 100? People usually say that it's about 7. And an odd number. Not that you have to vote, but 7 is a good size. Small groups are good for decision making. If you have 40 people in a group, it's very difficult to make a decision. But small groups are very good to solve problems, to make decisions. Where large groups are good for input, where you have people who have diverse opinions. If I ask you how your city could improve, and you might have 100, 200 great ideas. So large groups are good for opinions and getting ideas. One of the problems, however, with a large group is social loafing, and that's where you're not giving your input. There are too many people, and you can coast on something. However, I have seen people, student projects, where students even coast in small groups. But yes, social loafing is a real problem with large groups where you're just not pulling your weight. So we don't want that to happen. Here is an interesting chart on cohesiveness and productivity relationship. We know what cohesiveness is, and that is the bonding and the closeness. You want to be a member of the group. You like the members of the group. And we know performance norms. We want to be number one. We can increase productivity by 10%. I know we can do it. And it can be high or low on either of them. And we have four quadrants here, and I'm going to focus mainly on the one with high productivity. And basically this says that if you are a highly cohesive group and that you have high performance norms, your productivity will be high. The cohesiveness, again, we like each other, we want to be here, and then performance norms, we're going to win. Let's take an athletic team. The women's soccer at UT Tyler did a great job the baseball team. The cohesiveness and also the norms were very high. Now then, sometimes when cohesiveness is high and performance norms are low, you can have low productivity and moderate. There can be a problem with cohesiveness. I want to bring that out now. And the problem is you don't speak up. You want everybody to like you. You don't want to rock the boat. And therefore, you go along with the group. And that can always be a problem if that's too high. This is called groupthink, that we'll be talking about later. It's also called the Abilene paradox, where you tend to go along with the group and even though you really don't want to. Group decision making has many advantages and disadvantages. Some of the advantages are there's more diversity of views, more people giving viewpoints. Two heads are better than one. Therefore, we have more information and possibly better information. Decisions, therefore, can be better, high-quality decisions. And many people believe that when you have a group, a team, there is increased commitment there. However, there are disadvantages where you have dominant individuals, one person who has to have the floor all the time, unclear responsibility. If something goes wrong, who did it? Whose problem is it? Is it mine? Is it yours? And that's one of the things we'll be looking at in the next chapter on teams. If you're a team, we all have glory together or we go down together. Another disadvantage certainly are time. It takes a long time to have a committee meeting, and then therefore the money is expensive. Conformity pressures, as we mentioned on the ASH study, that many people go along with the group even though they don't want to, and this is also part of your group think. Group decision making, as I said, has many potential benefits. Pooling of resources, certainly. Two heads are better than one. Also, specialization, where you may have someone in compensation, someone in human resources who can help make a better decision. And when people work together, they tend to accept the decisions as a whole. Potential problems. Many people say, oh, that committee is a waste of time. And then you have group conflict. We know that people have infighting in there, but sometimes conflict is good. We'll be talking about that later. Intimidation by group leaders, and you remember the ASH study. Where you are influenced by the leader. There are some leaders who come in and tell what they want, and then everybody goes along with it. And they say, well, that's what they wanted. And certainly that's detrimental to the organization. All right, next we have groupthink that I've alluded to. And groupthink is not something you want. And as we go through this, I want you to think of some situations where groupthink could have occurred. In fact, the Challenger. Many people say that the Challenger was an example of groupthink. With the O-rings, they didn't check things out. They went along with the group. So therefore, let's look at some of these symptoms. We are indeed pressured to go along with the group, just like the ASH study. We don't want to rock the boat, perhaps, so we go along. And maybe the leader says, come on, get with it. Let's go on and finish this job. Many times we are reluctant to question the group decision. There was one company, a medical company, that had a diet pill, and no one questioned it. They went along with the group and found out later there were a lot of symptoms from this drug. Another symptom is illusion of unanimity, that we all have to agree, and that's not always the case. Inherent morality, that you are so moral. Oh, we've always done what's best for the customer. One person on the drug company mentioned rationalization. If we listened to lawyers, we would never even be making aspirin. And so you come up with a lot of different reasons to go along with that that group. So basically, failure to consider the alternatives. We didn't look at this, we didn't look at that. Reluctance to examine others' opinions. And many times in groupthink, you leave outsiders out of the room. They don't get a chance to participate. Only those who are going to agree. And then you get biased and incomplete use of information. And the result is indeed poor decision. poor decision making. And when I think of a movie, I think of groupthink with Titanic. They stated that that boat would never sink, or that ship would never sink, and they didn't look at all of the alternatives, and we all know what happened there. Again, here is some summary of groupthink. Group members rationalize any resistance or assumptions that they have. Members apply direct pressure on those who express doubt. And the members who have doubts or differing points of view keep silent. You don't speak up. You don't want to rock the boat. And there is an illusion of unanimity. In other words, we all have to agree. What can we do so that groupthink will not occur? Avoiding groupthink, there are four or five things here. Promote open inquiry. You know, ask each individual, what do you think? What is your opinion? And don't try to get the group just to go along with the leader. Use subgroups. If you have a group of seven, have three get together separately, and then the four get together, and then come back. And that's a wonderful idea. I think they should even do that on juries, perhaps. Admit the shortcomings. Well, we don't have all of our facts. What are we going to do? Hold a second chance meeting. I like that. I like the idea of a scenario. What would happen if we do it? And then go around the room and let everybody speak. And definitely the leader should not give opinion first. I had a leader that did that, and he said, I hope you all will go agree with me. And he had two or three people beforehand who would, and we went along with it. I'm sorry that we did. I still remember the circumstances there. What can we do about social loafing? Well, we know from the previous slides, have a smaller group, because a larger group will indeed what? There'll be more people, and the idea of coasting may occur. The more people working on a group task, the smaller the contribution made by any one member of the group. Social loafing is a tendency for individuals to expend less effort when working collectively than when working individually. The odd number groups do better than even. Groups of 5 to 7 perform better overall than larger or smaller groups. Techniques for group decision making, and especially for creative groups. There are certain things that you can do. You can have interaction, and basically that is at a committee meeting or team meeting. Ask people, what do you think? How are we going to improve our product? We're in a slump. What are we going to do about it? Just ask them their opinion. Brainstorm is very interesting. You may have 50 people in a room, and people just give ideas. They speak out. Usually there is a recorder. You do not criticize each person. The more ideas, the better. And then someone in management, or a group, a team, can go through them and sort them out and maybe come up with one or two out of the 100. It's a wonderful technique. In my classes, I always ask, what can we do to improve Tyler, Texas? And everything from a new restaurant to a liquor store to a new ballpark may come up. And just the more ideas, the better. Nominal is very similar to the brainstorming. The only difference, you know the problem up front, and you can bring in your notes and give your notes and think about it in that respect. And finally, another technique, the virtual decision making, basically is electronic, where you give your opinions and your ideas online. Before we do the review questions on this, I want to mention one other thing. It's called Abilene Paradox, and it's a tape that I usually show here in Tyler, but it's copyrighted. I can't put it online. But Abilene Paradox is very similar to groupthink. It was written by a consultant who several years ago had gone to Texas and Coleman, Texas, and the air conditioner didn't work on the car, but the whole family agreed that they wanted to go to Abilene and have dinner, and they really didn't want to go, but indeed they did. So let me, there is a test question on Abilene. I want to be sure that you get it right. And the Abilene Paradox explains why individuals perform better when cohesiveness exists. Well, that's not true. Groups behave differently than what the group members really want, and that is a symptom of groupthink. It's also the Abilene. High expectations lead to high performance. Well, that's not true. That is, it's true, but that's a Pygmalion effect. and it explains why groups make good decisions. Well, that is false. So you know you got that one right, and Abilene paradox is certainly an important concept. Okay, the other questions. Which of the following is not a symptom of groupthink? A, mind guarding. B, rationalization. C, illusion of unanimity. D, outsiders are brought in. And E, inherent morality. Well, I'm sure you know the answer to that. It is D, and outsiders are brought in. Well, that's a great idea, but it's certainly not a symptom of groupthink because they use mind guarding and they keep outsiders from coming in. Well, here is another one. I'm not going to read all of it, but Astro Inc. is reorganizing and your new work group begins working together on Monday morning. Your college course in organization has information about the stages of group development. What advice would you give your supervisor? You should warn your supervisor that in the first stage of group development, the team members will probably A, be uncertain, B, more productive, C, be in a stage of conflict, D, focus their group energy on performing the task. The answer is A, be uncertain, because you don't know what's going on, and that's very, very common. Well, that finishes Chapter 9 on Foundations of Group Behavior, and our next chapter in the second module will be team building, very similar to Chapter 9, and not every group that we've talked about is a team, so what is the difference? We will see you next time.